What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 123. 123. Here we go, right? All right. So today, my guest is, it was just such a fascinating conversation. We get into why we do the things we do. We get into psychedelics. Yes, you heard that right. Psychedelics. And maybe there's some use for it. I've never done them. I try to stay open-minded with stuff. And after the conversation, well, you guys will see. You'll see how it went. He did make some good points around it. But just a ton of fun. I've had the pleasure to get to know this guy, to be able to work with him some. And just a super fascinating conversation for me to have. I know you guys will all love it as well, especially when you're talking about like psychedelics, right? I mean, who doesn't like to go down that road at least a little bit to learn about it? So again, hope you enjoy it. Also too, make sure we did restock recently. We've sold out of a lot of things again at crossomeats.com, but there are still a lot of awesome things. I've also been telling you we launched some new gear. If you want to support a ranch that's out in the middle of nowhere in Idaho, sport your Crosso gear, right? Got hoodies. We've got long sleeve shirts if you're in the colder areas. We got t-shirts if you're in the warmer areas. All different kinds of designs and everything else you can go on. They've been selling like crazy. We appreciate your support if you have been grabbing those up. But if you haven't, make sure you can go get those at crossomeats.com. Just look in the apparel. You'll be able to find them there. Also, too, last thing, as you know, I'm going to keep telling you, go get your Black Rifle Coffee. Get it. Follow those guys. They're always blowing stuff up and doing some fun stuff there. Go to blackriflecoffee.com. Again, use the promo code Primal King. Promo code Primal King. Save yourself 20% off on that awesome Black Rifle Coffee. All right, everybody. Super excited for this one today. Let's get started. So the question is this. How do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. I have an awesome guest joining me today, and I know you'll all love him. This is someone who was a professional firefighter, a highly successful real estate entrepreneur, and a bodybuilder. He's studied with Zen monks in Japan, ran with the bulls in Spain, and has explored every continent on Earth, including Antarctica. His first social enterprise, Change Heroes, mobilized people in 80 different countries to fund and build 400 schools, water projects, libraries, girls' scholarships, anti-sex trafficking work, and has helped over 200,000 people around the world. That's far from all, though. He's an international speaker, including four separate TEDx talks. He spoke at the United Nations, as well as many other well-known companies, to be able to create an impact. He also teaches others to get their message out to the world with his current business, Thought Leader. He's had it all and realized what is truly important in his life, and now you'll find him in rural Mexico, living free and being the proud dad to his new baby boy. I'd love to introduce you all to my friend, Taylor Conroy. Again, Taylor, thanks for, you know what I should have added there is runner up in cornhole.
Oh, here we go. We're literally not even 17 seconds into the podcast. Derek gets his first W on board of his life. It happens to be against me. You know what? Here, I'll tell the story, Derek, because I know I just don't want to hear you tell it again. So we're at our team retreat, our offsite. There's cornhole comes out. I pair up with who I think is going to be the best cornhole player, Jordan. He's very good. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast because he lost us that last game, but we're not pointing fingers. Derek and an equally mediocre cornhole player somehow beat us in the final round. And yeah, so I got to listen to this for the next 6 months to the next offsite.
Oh gosh. Thanks for bringing it up. I should have added that in earlier, but no, in all reality, no, good to have you. So you've done so many cool things. It's almost like, where do we start? If you wouldn't mind, take me back, because I think you grew up and you started being a firefighter first, but I guess I'm kind of curious, like what led you from doing that into literally like all the other crazy things? Did you grow up kind of wanting to do more? Was it like happenstance that you just kind of stumbled into these things, or like how did that start, maybe from an early age, kind of that transition?
I think great question. First of all, I barely got through high school, so you know, my options were more limited. It wasn't like I'm going to go out and be a lawyer or a doctor or a accountant. I vowed to not go into another academic institution, if you can call high school that, when I was in high school, I was like, this is just completely pointless. I'm not going to use anything that I'm learning here. It's not teaching me to think creatively. And I just didn't think it really mattered. And so when I got out of high school, I traveled to Australia and Thailand and Malaysia, kind of got the travel bug. And I became a firefighter mainly no lie, I had never thought about it before. You know, people when their kids are like 5 years old and they're drawing themselves as a firefighter. That wasn't me. I never thought about it till like the day that I interviewed to be a firefighter, because a friend of mine was like, hey, you should go try to be a volunteer firefighter. my partner Marissa's looking at me laughing. She hasn't heard the story. You should be a firefighter. He says, you know, it's fun and girls like firefighters. And I was like, really? I mean, I was 19, so that's what mattered to me. So I went to firefighting school, did that for 3 years, absolutely loved it. Or I mean, got hired after firefighting school and, you know, decided that the root of like seniority and someone telling me that after I've been in a place for 10 years, then I can get a promotion, or, and telling me when I have to show up and how long I have to show up for and what I have to do, just didn't vibe with me. So like the inner entrepreneur was kind of coming out. And I wanted money. I remember seeing all the guys around the fire hall table and them complaining about them not having enough money to put their kid in through hockey that year. And I'm Canadian, right? So we're all talking about hockey at the fire hall. And it just kind of got me thinking, how can I not be in that situation when I'm a dad? I don't want my kids to ever be limited because of any choices that I've made. And I got into, I guess I just kind of got into this string of starting businesses. I started a real estate company and it went really well. I ended up selling it, traveled around the world for a year, went to 50 countries, started another company, which was Change Heroes, the fundraising company. And then Journey, which was a travel company where we'd build homes for families living in slum conditions throughout Latin America. So we built 150 homes. And it was kind of this evolution of like, it felt like there was always another facet or part or beauty of life that could be stacked on to the one before to make life even more enjoyable and exciting. So like firefighting was great. I was like serving people. I got to be out in the community. I got to do stuff I loved, like high angle rope rescue and swift water rescue and auto extrication, which is a blast, right? But it missed the entrepreneurial, like I'm in control of my own schedule. So I did real estate, then added on some impact work, then added on travel plus impact work. And it just seemed like at each stage, it was almost like every 4 years for me, something new would kind of present itself that just felt in my body, just felt like that's the thing that I'm supposed to be doing. So sometimes it worked out and I would shift out of the company and get bought out, for example, like in real estate. And sometimes the company would shift me out because it would just implode and fail. Right. So of the like five companies I've started, two have failed miserably. Well, one's failed miserably. One's failed not as miserably, but definitely failed. And then two have gone well. And then we're on this one right now, which is, I think, going pretty good.
Yeah. So how do you reconcile that? Because this is something I always find super fascinating. Because I think so many people are unwilling or maybe scared to take chances, especially after maybe having a failed business, right? Maybe it didn't work out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's something that you've learned, or is it just kind of like who you are? You know what I mean? Being willing to take those risks, hop into another business, maybe after one just failed, like maybe the one that failed miserably, right? Like, do you feel like that's just something that you just have that in you, or is it something you feel like you've been able to develop kind of those calluses to start up again?
I wish I could say the latter. I wish I could say, yeah, I was just like toughed it out. But there was a period of time where I was genuinely crying twice a day, just so down and out that, I mean, my whole identity, I wrapped up in the success of whatever venture that I was working on, right? I remember talking to a friend of mine who's also a mentor, and he's like, Taylor, everything is so wrapped up for you around this company, this fundraising company. If it's going well, you're happy. If it's not going well, you're completely miserable. And you need to extract yourself from that a little bit to at least get a vantage point and some solace and some peace of mind. And I was like, that's really good advice. I couldn't figure out how to implement it. I couldn't extract myself from that business and those ups and downs. And when I say failed miserably, I mean, I went bankrupt. You know, I went from being a millionaire in my 20s to being a zero-unaire in my mid 30s. So I was 35 and living in a friend's guest room. Thank God he wasn't charging me rent. Living in his guest room, I was riding his bike with his surfboard to the beach, surfing in the waters that smell like pee in Venice Beach in Los Angeles, and wondering, was it all a fluke? Was all the success before a total fluke and happenstance? Maybe, but I felt like maybe I'm just a failure and I just got lucky a few times. And maybe that's who I am, right? Because my identity was so at risk and in question. And that said, I remember thinking, well, I'm probably going to be living for another 60 years or so. So do I want to be thinking like this for another 60 years? Or do I want to like give it another kick, right? Or do I want to give it 60 more kicks if it takes, you know what I mean? Like, till I go out, do I want to die fighting? And I just decided that my brain was so flawed. It was so focused on the wrong things that I needed to retrain my brain to look for and know success and opportunities when I saw them. And so I did like the old, the boring stuff that you've read about before, that all of your listeners have read about, like Think and Grow Rich, Richest Man in Babylon, The Science of Getting Rich, you know, these books that are total like 100-year-old classics sometimes, like Science of Getting Rich, which I've probably listened to 50 times, maybe 100. It's still as true today as it was back then, right? And it's basically saying, get up off your ass and focus on the right things. Do what you can every single day in a successful way. And it's like, it's mathematical. The mathematical probability of you being successful is 100 when you do those things, when you just continue to make every day as successful as possible. And so after that, I decided to challenge myself. I'm like, okay, well, who really gets the opportunity to be 35 years old and be at zero, to like really see, do they have it or do they not? And I set a goal for myself. I'm like, I'm going to try to make $1 million in a year. You know, I'm going to try to like really come back from this thing and make $1 million in a year. And within, let's see, starting that business after bankruptcy, we were at like 900K. I think it probably took 13 months to make the first $1 million. So not exactly in 12 months, but 13 months, made $1 million. And then subsequent to then, it's been kind of up and up and up. And it proved to me that it's like, I'm creating this reality. I'm creating my world. I'm creating my success. I'm creating my failures. And I think what's really interesting about that personally, in the world that we live in today, Derek, I think the world reality is elastic. The world reality is very flexible depending on who is speaking of what the reality is, right? And so right now, if we were to put our agency and our power in outside circumstances, a lot of people would be unhappy. And a lot of people are unhappy because they're waiting for everything to get quote unquote better before they actually enjoy their lives. When in reality, I think the world being a total shit show and our lives still being totally fulfilling, thriving, and amazing can coexist. And so that's kind of what I've learned from all of this. And that's the calluses maybe that I have now, hopefully, to kind of come back to your question, is my happiness is not dependent on any person. It's not dependent on any circumstance or any business. My happiness is mine. My presence is mine. And things can be going to hell in a handbasket out there. And it doesn't have to affect who I am or how much I make or, you know, how much I contribute.
No, I love it. And that's, so one of the most fascinating things I think is, you know, I've had people on here who have been, you know, I've had guests on that have been professional athletes. And we all know, most professional athletes, they get out of whatever sport they're in, not because they want to, but mostly because they have to. And a lot of times their identity is completely wrapped up into them being a successful athlete, a successful business person, whatever it may be. How, like, I would love to know maybe for you, like how you're able to detach the two, because I know I'm guilty of it. I think so many of us are, to where it's a good week, you're feeling good, you made some money, whatever it may be. It's a bad week, the world is ending, like it's never going to recover. Like, how do you actually separate maybe work or your identity, I guess, from your business, from your work, whatever it is, so you can lead a happy life despite what's going on with that?
I mean, to be honest with you, my first answer would be a question. I would ask, if there's anyone in any position that has to know how to get the fuck up after every failure, it's someone who's in enrollment. It's someone who's getting on a call with a new person right after they got off a call that was 90 minutes long, and the person needed what you were selling. You know they needed what they were selling. You're selling. Maybe they had the money, maybe they didn't, and so it just didn't go the way that you thought it should. So while I kind of dive deeper in myself to answer the question deeper, I'd love for you to answer that if possible. How do you do it? You're the one who's doing it literally 5, 6, 7 times a day, all week, week after week after week, and yet continually pull off really fantastic results, really stable, consistent results. So I'd ask you the same question.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I've tried to do in my life is perspective. I think that it's really easy to lose perspective in anything, in any business, in just an identity overall. Like, I think it's really easy to have your focus be on results when, if you keep it in perspective, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, like, regardless of how much money I made today, regardless of maybe the feelings I have, like, I have an awesome wife, I have great kids, like, I live basically in paradise, I feel like, for me, right? And so having that perspective, I think for me is so important. And I think it's really easy to lose perspective. I think it's so easy to be like, Jim just got a new car, you know, Jane just got a new house. Here I am working my ass off and I can't get a new car or a new house. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to lose perspective. But then, like you said, like, so often reality isn't reality. It's like, well, yeah, maybe Jim bought a new house, but he literally, like, if he lost one paycheck, he would lose his house, right? Like, that's the reality that I don't see. And so that's why I think I'm always so fascinated by people who do or don't attach their identity to the results, because it is something that I've struggled with in the past, but I feel like I've gotten pretty good at detaching that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that perspective, or the perspective of perspective. I think I would say two things. You know, that now that I've had time to kind of let some answers bubble up, I'd say two things really important. One is it getting to the place where happiness wasn't dependent on any outcome at all. It was just dependent on, you know, really loving what I'm doing every day. Similar to you loving where you wake up every day. You wake up in rural Idaho on your cattle ranch and immersed in nature, right? And you get to teach your kids about what's important in life. So that's with you every single day. And I think the equivalent of that in work is doing something every day that lights you up. Like for me, like when, as soon as we got on this call before we started recording, I was saying, I just had an epic content day. I filmed, I think, 9 videos. I fucking love filming videos. I love it. I love creating content. I love innovating, creating, and orchestrating. That's like my thing, right? And so if I'm doing that every day, I'm going to be lit up and the results are going to come. I know it's like the cheesy cliche, you know, do what you love and the money comes and all that stuff, but it happens to be. I mean, that's why a lot of cliches are cliches, is because they're true, right? So that, start really leaning into what makes me genuinely happy on a day-to-day basis, has helped me to have perspective and have some distance between me and, you know, this outcome that I'm thinking is going to bring some sort of happiness or solace. And the second thing, I'd love to tell you a quick story if that's cool. So you've heard of peyote?
Yep.
It's like a cactus, like plant medicine. Yeah, it's a psychedelic, exactly. And so I do this peyote ceremony one time in the desert, and I'm going back to my place. I was living in California at the time. So getting back into California and going to California, or to my place in Encinitas, and I'm driving a scooter, this little like Honda Ruckus scooter. And I'm driving down the street and I see this campfire on the beach. These people having a campfire and there's a big bush next to them. And I thought to myself, how cool would it be if that campfire started that bush on fire? And then I know it's kind of a weird thing. But then This is what firefighters dream about. Okay. Just being honest with you. This is our fantasy. I was like, and then I had this whole thing like played out in my mind of the bush catches fire. Then the apartment building, there's a bit of a fire in the apartment building. And so then I need to like climb up two stories and like rescue someone from inside the building. Again, this is maybe a firefighter thing. And again, I haven't been a firefighter for like 15 years, but I had this whole thing plays out in my mind. And I'm still on the tail end of this like peyote ceremony. So I'm still, I guess, technically a little bit high. And I'm like, wait, what on earth did I just daydream about? Did I just daydream about a building catching on fire? Like, what is wrong with me? You know? But in this expanded state, and if any of your listeners have tried, whether it be mushrooms or DMT or ayahuasca or peyote or acid, you know, whatever it might be, these things can shift us into a state of exponentially more open-mindedness, right? At least that's what they do for me. I'm a huge fan of psychedelics, and they shift me into a place where I feel like I can actually like walk around my subconscious and see, oh, that's why I do that. That's why that where that negative pattern came from that's definitely not serving me or is messing up parts of my life, right? So in this moment when I'm like daydreaming about a fire in me, and of course I'm saving like a baby and its mother and whatever, you know, the whole like backdraft scenario. And that all happens. And I thought, I started contemplating. I was kind of walking around in my subconscious still after the ceremony. I was like, why did I just daydream about that? And I remembered the earliest time that I had a daydream about that, which was when I was like 14 years old. And I had seen, it wasn't even a daydream. It was like a hopeful experience that I wanted to have, where there was a dog, it was about to jump off of a boat, but it had a leash on. I'll skip you all the details. And I knew that if it jumped, I would be the only one who could go and save it. And so it did end up jumping off the boat. I ran in and saved it. But the thing is, I was hoping it was going to jump off the boat because I wanted to be the one to save it. Okay. And so I started going back deeper and deeper into like the recesses of my subconscious of like, why do I want to save things? And I got all the way back to a childhood memory about, again, I'll kind of skip the middle part, but where I totally ruined an occasion for my whole family. I told, like, I was 6 years old. And what I took from the experience is that Taylor screws things up. Okay. So the belief that got embedded way back then was that Taylor screws things up. So with that belief, a lot of times our goals come from places that we don't even know where they're coming from, right? And what this peyote did is it opened up my mind to see that a lot of the goals that I had of like being a firefighter and saving people, saving the day, making things right, and starting Change Heroes and building schools all over the world and libraries and anti-sex trafficking work and all sorts of incredible initiatives all over the world. Sure, a percentage of my motivation for doing those things was philanthropic and empathetic, et cetera. And there's definitely a slice. There's definitely a percentage that came from Taylor wanting to prove that he doesn't screw things up.
Wow.
So what I'm trying to get is, like, you know, it's easy for us to ask simple questions where they sound straightforward. Like, where does this come from? You know, most overachievers are overachievers because they don't think they're enough.
Right.
And they're perpetually trying to prove that they're enough. Right. And after that day of the fantasy of the fire fantasy, we'll call it, after the day of the fire fantasy and actually seeing where this came from, I went back and I looked at like some like life goals that I had of like, I was like, I want to be a New York Times bestseller. I want to be all of these things. And seeing where they were coming from, I literally crossed like 80% of them off the list, being like, I actually don't want that. That's this is just a genuine attempt for me to prove that I'm enough. And so all the way back to your question of like, you know, this line of questioning around perspective of getting up and enjoying yourself and being detached from maybe a certain goal or outcome for the week and not having these highs and lows. When we're going toward goals that have come to us from a deep place of surrender and listening to what God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, wants of us, what wants to move through us, that it always gives us energy. It never takes away energy. And it's a goal that we can be working toward for the rest of our lives. It's a goal that we actually don't care if we ever hit it, because we're working like in alignment with something, I think, exponentially bigger, something infinite. So long story short, like, trying to answer the question here, Taylor, is I believe that lasting happiness for me, as far as what I've found so far, is working on something that has come to me that feels like it's trying to work through me, that I'm not trying to achieve to shift what other people think of me, to shift what I think of myself. Because when that stuff is gone, if you're not going after anything to heal a wound or fill a hole that can never be filled, you start to just go after stuff that truly lights you up every single day, rather than it hopefully lighting you up at the end of the year if you've hit the numbers that you want to hit.
It's so fascinating. Because literally as you're walking through that, like all the way back to the six-year-old self, it makes me think like, okay, why am I maybe driven the way that I am? And it's like, you know, does it have to do with, you know, when you grow up poor and you're like, hey, I don't want to be poor. When I get older, like, I don't want my kids to be poor or whatever. And not like, it's not like we were like awfully poor my whole childhood, but it was pretty poor for quite a while, especially in, like, while my parents were married. Right. And so then now all of a sudden I'm sitting here in my head being like, you know, is there reasons behind that? Like, I'm sure there has to be. I mean, that was like my 6-7-year-old version, like wanting nice cars. Right. But we didn't have nice cars, stuff like that. And it's like, okay, it's so interesting. I've never done any psychedelics. To be honest with you, I've been totally against them most of my life. And recently I've finally been like, maybe they still freak me out, to be honest with you. Like I've seen people take too much mushrooms and I'm like, that did not look like fun. But like the older I get and the more people I hear that maybe do it, I guess if you say it the right way as a way to like get into your subconscious, like I would be more open-minded to it now, I know, than ever before, but it still freaks me out. I know that you've done it and you've gotten a lot away from it. Maybe for people who've never even thought about doing, you know, these evil psychedelics, like what do you feel like it helps you do? I'm always so fascinated by being able to get into a different space, maybe to see things that you can't normally see.
Whew. Wow. What does it do? You know, I think everyone probably has a different medicine. Like in the people that do psychedelics, typically they don't go like, hey, let's do some psychedelics tonight. They're like, let's have some medicine tonight, right? Because we feel like it's a part of our healing. It's a part of our process. So if I say medicine, I'm using it interchangeably with the word psychedelics. Okay. So I think everyone's their own medicine, their own psychedelic that they're drawn to. It might be LSD or mushrooms, like I said, or peyote or ayahuasca, DMT. I mean, I've done all of them numerous times. The one that has completely shifted how I look at the world, I guess technically all of them have, but the one probably the most profoundly is DMT. So with DMT, the two ways that you can do it. One is you're basically a crystallized version of a DMT that's derived from a tree bark. Another one is a version that's called 5-MeO, where it's taken from the venom of a toad. Okay. So you're literally like in essence smoking and inhaling the venom of a toad. So that they're both mind blowing. And the experience, as far as I can share, as I, you know, try to put it into words, is when we as the human being or the smoker of the DMT have an intention, right? Of like, okay, my intention is to dive into my subconscious. My intention is to figure out what wounds I have had as a child that are, you know, still playing out in present day, whatever it might be, like an intention. Let's say the intention is like right here. This is the thing that you want to know. If this is where the intention is to scale from what you want to know, DMT takes you 7 universes past it. So beyond where it takes me is smoking. It's beyond time. It's beyond space. It's beyond the physical senses. It's how would you put it? It's like language can't explain it. So let's say it's hard to communicate. It's difficult to communicate where it is. And that being said, in my experience, when I come back from a DMT experience or almost any psychedelic experience, when I come back, if there's been intentions, it typically goes and lines up and answers all of the intentions on the way back in. Because the intention is like, it's a human construct. We're wanting to improve our life, move away from fear, move towards pleasure, move away from pain, move towards pleasure. That's like what motivates us, right? As humans. And where you go with some of these medicines is so far beyond the human experience that when we come back, my typical experience is going, and by the way, DMT lasts like 10, 15 minutes, right? You smoke this thing. And then on this earth plane, it's only like 10 or 15 minutes that you're gone. And when I come back, I have this thought, the thought process goes in like, oh yeah, Taylor, that's my name. Is it Taylor? And I'm a man and I'm 6'2". And oh yeah, that's what I do for a living. And I kind of go back through like reorienting myself to this body, right? And so what that does, again, in my experience, is it blasts us so far past anything that we think matters in this lifetime. And then in my experience, orients me to something far, far bigger, far more, something completely infinite, and connects me to that infinite thing. So that the little things that fragment us, like some childhood wounding or something that happened, you know, as a kid or as an adolescent or something like that, those things can like start to align with that infinite again, instead of being fragmented as they might've been before. And tell me if this verbiage that I'm using is just too like esoteric, please let me know. But it seems to align things personally in my own psyche and my own experience of this earth in a way that is much more at peace. Much more aligned. I don't know if you can hear my son. He's kind of
no, it's all good
in the background. we don't have a huge house here. It's like a, it's a big one bedroom. So I can't do much about it. It starts to align me with a very deep place of peace, and brings up the things that need healing in the process so that it can do that. And I believe that when we combine like a medicinal practice, let's say like a psychedelic experience or a psychonaut, I think they call it. Do they call it psychonaut, psychedelic astronaut kind of thing? And when you combine that with actual real world, tangible, like taking ownership over my life experience, and like I'm Taylor and I can have an effect on the world around me, and I'll do the personal work on this 3D plane at the same time. So therefore integrating the infinite into the finite, I think that's a really, really beautiful marriage or a really beautiful relationship, rather than just being on the earth plane. This is my, strictly from my own experience, just being on the earth plane, trying to think my way through everything, trying to be super logical. Everything's cause and effect. There's nothing that much bigger. I'm doing everything I can on this earth plane, which is in and of itself, I think, an extreme and too extreme. And then the other one, you've met people like this, they're like doing ayahuasca like every weekend. They're basically high all the time. There's no integration into like this earth plane, and therefore bringing that infinite knowledge here and being able to share it in like the 3D plane. I like to refer to it as like, that's like the 5D. This is the 3D. And when you can like bring those together, in my humble experience of psychedelics, which is a far more vast field than I'm an expert in. I'm definitely like a novice. I think it's a beautiful thing, and it can only in the 3D absolutely serve your sales conversations, your podcasts, the energy that you put into the world, your fatherhood, your partnership with your wife, like all of those things in my experience get better because that aligns you with something more powerful and starts to alleviate the blocks to you being in alignment with the infinite.
So fascinating. So do you feel like, so I have, we'll just say I have a friend, someone I know, who did an ayahuasca trip.
Is his name Derek?
No. I told you, man, I'm freaked out of that stuff. I'm so fascinated by it, but I'm also like terrified of it. And this is part of the reason though. So there's a friend of mine, that had an experience with ayahuasca and essentially came back from that completely changed. And I would think in a good way, but also, it was almost like he started seeing things, and this actually kind of leads me into some of the other things I want to talk to you about. But it was almost like he started seeing what he believes, and honestly, I align with it, is truth in the world. He probably became what you would call a conspiracy theorist. He started using, so he, I don't want to give too much away because it's not my story to tell, but let's say he was in this business here. And all of a sudden, after doing that, it opened up his eyes, at least what he would tell you, to all these other things that were way outside of his business. It hurt his business because what he was talking wasn't part of his business, right? It was kind of stay in your lane, man. And I guess, like, do you ever feel like you come back from that and now you almost like know too much? You've seen so much that now you can no longer claim ignorance in your, you know, bliss in your ignorance or whatever, right? Like, because it does open you up. And for him, like I said, he now, like if you follow him on Instagram, it's completely different, all of his posts, than what it was 2 years ago before he did that, because it's like now he sees everything. And I don't know, like, have you ever had that type of experience to where it's almost like you got outside of yourself enough to where you could see what you believe is truth, and it changed like everything in terms of maybe what your life path was?
Oh yeah.
Is that scary? Yeah. And I mean, is it scary knowing that I could go and do this and 15 minutes later, literally I could think completely different coming out of this? Cause I will tell you, and maybe this is me being a control freak, that freaks me the hell out, man. Like, I'm like, man, if I go in there and then 15 minutes I come out and I'm like, yeah, this marriage and family thing, it's really not what I want to do actually. Like, right, you know what I mean? Right. Like, do you end up burning down everything around you because of this? Or
I love how you answered the question within the question. You said, I know it might just be me being a control freak.
Yeah. And so basically what you're saying is I'm a control freak. Okay. That's fine. But like, has that ever worried you like in those experiences?
I think that the people that it seems to be the people, and myself included, when they have bad trips or trips that really don't go anywhere, it's because of them feeling like they can, in an endeavor an attempt to control the experience, when in reality, you're touching into the infinite. You're touching into something that is far beyond human comprehension. Yet we try to control it. I mean, here's the thing. I think the Earth is spinning at like 22,000 miles an hour, right? Derek, we're on a big fucking rock hurtling through space. We have no control as it is. Just like, that's just scientific fact. We have no control. And sometimes we learn that through losing control, whether it be like a natural disaster happens or something chaotic happens in our life. And we realize that we don't have, at some point we surrender to all that is, right? At some point we, like, you know, Alan Watts, do you ever listen to Alan Watts stuff? Yeah. So
the physicist, right?
There's this really cool. Yeah. Like, what do they call those?
Astrophysicist.
Philosopher. And I don't think he's an astrophysicist, but you know what? Maybe he is. He's that smart. But honey, what did Alan Watts do for a living? Just like a philosopher. He's a philosopher, she says.
Okay.
So in one of his speeches, he's talking about, imagine that at night when you went to sleep, you could dream any life that you wanted to dream. You could have any life that you wanted, and you would live 75 years in that life. And imagine that in that dream, you could live, you know, I'm botching the exact numbers, but let's say for my purposes here, let's say you could live 100 different lives every single night, right? Every single night, you could live 100 different full lives, exactly the life that you wanted. One, you could be a movie star, the next you could be a soccer player, the next you could be a closer, whatever it is, right? And you live that life. At some point, after dictating what all these lives are going to be like, at some point, you're going to go, I think I want to mix it up a little bit. I want like a little bit of unknown. I don't want to know everything that's going to happen in all these lives. Like, let's shake it up and give me something I don't know about. And then eventually you would enter into what you're living right now. If you lived an infinite amount of lives, at some point you would live the life that you're living right now. Every single person listening to this would be living this exact life that you are living right now, right? Individually. And you don't know what's going to happen. Yet we here think that we have some sort of a control. In reality, the most freedom that I think you and I both stand for freedom above and beyond probably anything else. I think there's definitely a value that you and I share. Yeah. The ultimate freedom is being free to let go into the infinite, to let go into the uncontrollable, right? Like I remember a friend saying one time, or maybe I was reading it somewhere, it says, you know, they got good news and bad news. And this is what I would say to you if you were just about to, you know, be on a mushroom trip with me. I'd say, you know, I got good news and bad news for you, Derek. The bad news is you have to let go of the railing and fall. You have to let go. Let's say the railing is control. At some point, you have to let go of the railing and fall. And the good news is that there's no bottom. Right? The good news is there's no bottom. And so I believe that that's what life is. We're all clinging to this like illusory sense of control, which stops us from going down the path that we know might, well, deep down we know might serve us at a deeper level. And in reality, when we do let go of that, we realize there's no bottom. And so therefore, if we're falling and there's no bottom, falling isn't falling, falling is flying, right? Like we're now in the infinite. And so if to get back to your question kind of specifically about having control and doing a whatever kind of journey you want to do, when you said the statement, you know, something to this extent of you're scared to do it, because then you won't be able to go back to your blissful ignorance, right? If you've already identified and therefore showed that you're aware of the ignorance, then you have no choice but to explore further. If you're awake to your blissful ignorance, you're no longer blissfully ignorant. You're now just in a place of like trying to get back into the warm bed, even though you really got to take a piss and you're trying to go, you know what I mean? Like when you wake up in the morning, it's like 5 a.m. You're like, oh, it's freezing outside. I don't want to have to take a pee. It's so warm in this bed. And you try to keep going back to sleep, but something is like nagging you and pulling you out of that bed. You're there. And that's not a fun state to be in, right? So if you're aware of your ignorance, you're not blissfully ignorant. And if you have questions about ayahuasca or psilocybin or Chuma, whatever it might be, it might be a gentle call to send a message on Slack to your buddy Taylor and say, hey, one of our team members did this actually very recently, so I did not expect it from them at all. Message actually sent me a text and said, hey, my birthday's coming up and I'm thinking I might want to dabble in some psilocybin and I have a feeling that you might be involved. Right. And I was like, well, that's my favorite text ever. I will go wherever you want to go. So long story short with it is we all feel a call towards something. I think personally, we've all feel a call towards something higher and more expanded than ourselves. And that call doesn't necessarily come up and be like, you know, a piece of paper on your desk being like, Derek, you know, do ayahuasca next weekend. It comes in this a bit of a fearful knowing that there's something beyond and then you're curious about it and you want to explore it. And that little itch only gets itchier until you scratch it.
So interesting. I like when you were talking about that too, I don't know if you've ever heard Tony Robbins talk about certainty and uncertainty and kind of like the balance between the two to where like, basically if everything is certain, your life is boring. If everything is uncertain, you're kind of a disaster, right? Like there has to be that balance between it. But no, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I want to talk to you too, cause go ahead.
Can I say, I just wanted to note if for anyone else that echoes your sentiment of, or this potential worry of what if I go and I come back a completely different person and I just burn it all down when I come back. If you burn it all down when you come back, chances are you were living in a thing that needed to get burnt all down, right? Derek, of anyone I know, you're not living in a thing that needs to get burned down. Right. I know you enough to know that you're not.
You're going to get me in trouble here, man. I mean, my wife's going to hear this and it was just a hypothetical. Okay. I promise.
I'm saying, and you're not in something that needs to get burnt down. In my experience, if we allow ourselves to let go to like, oh God, what if I let it all go? Every time I felt that a ton of times in my life. So what if I just like burn it all down? If I let myself go to that place of hypothesizing around that, I always go through that place rather than running back to what's comfortable, go through that place. So you're like, actually, no, I want all of this and I want to elevate it. I want it to be even better. And even I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better father. I want to be a better steward of this land. In my experience, that's what happened after kind of going deep within yourself for people that are already living, you know, in a quite aligned life.
Well, most people I know who have done it, and then other people I've just heard of on podcasts and stuff who have done, especially ayahuasca. I don't know a lot about DMT, but if most of them have absolutely loved it. A lot of them will do it once a year or maybe a couple times just to kind of get back to that place. So, I mean, yeah, I'm going to have to, we'll see. Let's put it that way. We'll see I'll report back.
I'll stand by.
All right. So one thing I want to talk about, because I know we're getting, we could probably go on this conversation for hours though. I love it. It's so much fun to me. Hopefully, I know everybody will love it. But now you're living in Mexico. You're basically in rural Mexico. Obviously you're from Canada. I think most rational people see what's going on in Canada and is like, what the hell? Like, how are you processing all of this? Like, because I see you on your Instagram, and if you guys aren't following him, we'll give Taylor's Instagram handle in a minute. But like, I see you talking about this stuff. Do you ever feel like, I actually messaged this to a friend today. It's almost like I feel like sometimes I'm at a party and everyone's like hammered drunk and I'm not. And I'm just like looking around being like, how is this fun? Like, how is anybody letting that, you know, how's anyone letting everyone throw the TV out the window, right? Like, this is just insane to me. But yet so many people are just like, okay with what is going on. How do you reconcile that? Being from Canada, seeing what's going on there, obviously Australia, New Zealand, I mean, really all around the world. Like what do you think when you see this type of stuff?
part of me feels completely enraged. Part of me feels at times very, very, very little anymore. But before, when I was in the mix of it, of not living in a place where I felt safe, like in Mexico, I feel very safe. It's a very free place comparatively. It's the only country I would even think about living in on the whole planet right now, based on the circumstances of every country in the world. Genuinely, that's not hyperbole. This is the only place I would think about living in. The place that would be like second, a distant second, is Nicaragua, but there's just too many unknowns there. Costa Rica's already fallen. El Salvador, not the place to be. Like, this is the only place that I would live. Sometimes I feel overwhelmed. I feel stressed out. I feel completely dumbfounded. Other times I feel like this is the best video game that I may have invented somewhere on a macro level, or maybe this is the best comedy. Is this the Truman Show? And it's like hilarious. It's like a thriller and a comedy at the same time. And it's suspense. I don't know, but it's the best of whatever it is. Right. So I think all of those things for like a macro level, I don't think anything, any of this exists. On the micro level, it very much does. And I'm experiencing it right now. And it feels very real. On Canada specifically, if you're watching this convoy, have you seen the Freedom Convoy?
Yeah, I actually was just seeing that. Like, how cool is that? All these truckers, right? Like, they're headed in to kind of shut down the Capitol or something?
They're going to Ottawa. And people are already trying to spin it every which way. You know, you've got the major news, what was it, CBC in Canada saying, oh, there's a post on Twitter, like, hundreds of truckers have gotten together to protest dangerous road conditions. And it's like, nope. No, the answer is no on that one, Scott. They're protesting these mandates, right? Very clear. Look at the side of their trucks, what's written all over their truck and the grills of their trucks and the signage of the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Canadians that are coming to the road and waving at them and supporting them. There's 50,000 trucks last time I saw, 50,000 vehicles in this convoy, which is going to be way bigger. They've raised $3.7 million. Already, by the time you post this podcast, it's going to be more. They raised $3.7 million. The people are speaking. So what I see in the beginning is like, no, you're joking. They're not going to introduce this like mandatory injection. You're kidding, right? Like, we saw this a while ago. Marissa and I were living in Hawaii. And I was like, Marissa, this is like late 2019. Is it 2019? Late 2020. Before anything was mandated anywhere, I was like, you know what? They're going to mandate this thing. We got to get off this island. We got to get out of this country. And we moved to Central Mexico. So we moved to Central Mexico a little bit over a year ago to Central Mexico. We tried out Costa Rica. Again, Costa Rica's fallen. They're making stuff mandatory. We now live on Baja, right? We lived here for the last 8 months. This is where we're staying, unless anything crazy happens and changes. But what I think when I look at Canada is it's absolutely insane. And it's not a surprise at all. It's absolutely not a surprise. It's a lot of that population, and Australia and the UK are all kind of going in lockstep for Commonwealth countries, right? So we came from Britain and everyone's just kind of following suit. The wild card right now is the UK just kind of throwing down all of the restrictions. They're like, oh, you don't have to wear masks anymore. Nope, you don't have to do this anymore, which blows my mind. Yet Canada and Australia are just still getting more strict. So what I look at, I keep trying to shift into the mindset that we kind of talked about before, which is like, rather than focusing on the negative, the absolute shit show, I think this is a time in history when we are self-identifying as what we stand for and what we don't stand for, right? I was definitely never political. I was never really that involved in what was going on in the world, to be honest with you, aside from trying to make the world a little bit of a better place. But now you can't ignore it. It's getting to the place where you have to say, this is where I stand, this is where I do not stand. If you want your child to have to get an experimental injection, mandated, they have to get an experimental injection. We don't have to go down the road of how many deaths it's caused or how many people have been maimed and injured by it. Don't have to go down that road right now. But to have to get an experimental injection to stop something that for kids is literally not even a blip on the radar of health for kids. It's literally not a concern for children. Show me any study that shows that kids are actually adversely affected by this greater than influenza. And maybe I definitely open my ears to it, but none of those studies exist. Okay. So to mandate that for children at some point, even the people that are totally lethargic and want to keep their head in the sand, many of my family members included, talk about beating your head against a brick wall in some of those conversations. But if you talk to anyone, that at some point you have to start standing up, because you're standing up for your kids, right? So I feel all the things, enraged and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like it's an amazing opportunity. It's an opportunity for people to self-select and opt out of that type of culture. I've become like this unofficial railroad to Mexico, like out of Canada. I've got people that are renting private jets, getting across the border on land, then flying to Mexico, buying land down here, sight unseen. People coming down. I'm aiming to buy a really big piece of farmland in an area just south of Todos Santos, which, by the way, Todos Santos is on the Baja Peninsula. You guys should check it out. It's an amazing place. So that I can subdivide it into smaller lots, build some tiny homes, have a place for Canadians to land when they get here, orient themselves and decide if they're going to buy something and build, et cetera. So I think that there's new markets emerging that never existed before. And what it's doing Derek, again, you're in control of your reality. I'm in control of my reality. You are in your paradise of Idaho, right? I'm in my paradise of Mexico. And hopefully going to be spending maybe a couple months in Idaho each year in the summertime, because it sounds like a great and very aligned place. This is like the first time when all of these like-minded, in my lifetime, where all of these like-minded, smart, creative, interesting people are culminating in the same place. So they're gathering. Like, I had a surgeon in my yard the other day. We were just chatting. He's a surgeon from Canada, been a surgeon for 20 years. He's got a 2-year wait list, amazing specialist. He is now leaving his practice because they mandated it for all healthcare workers, right? Yep. If you're a naturopathic doctor or a naturopathic doctor student, naturopath, you know what I'm saying, student of naturopathy, you can't even take your final exam without having the V. You literally can't even take the exam, meaning you can't be licensed unless you've got it. It's absolutely insane on every single level. And it's shifting people to move to kind of culminate with other like-minded people. And I think that's what's going to be the saving. I honestly think where we're going with this is there's going to continue to be this split. Some people are going to go toward, let's say, technology, dependence on Big Brother, dependence on this like weird daddy complex that people keep seeming to have. They're just like, you know, but Biden says we can't do this yet, so we're just gonna have to wait. But you know, Trudeau said we can't do this, so we're just gonna have to wait. This like this weird, crazy, like Stockholm syndrome-esque experience that's happening for many, many people. And then for other people that are awake to this stuff, they're going, fuck that. I'm gonna move somewhere where I feel safe, that is free, that is with like-minded people. And I believe in 5 years from now, Todos Santos is gonna be an absolute mecca for like-minded, smart, heart-centered, creative entrepreneurs. You're gonna have this huge brain drain from Canada of all the smart people leaving, smart, awake people leaving. Same thing for many of the insane states that are out there, Idaho not included. Idaho seems to be doing well. Yep. And you're gonna have these pockets created all over the world of people that get it, people that are rewilding themselves in a way, right? They're feeling drawn to grow their own food, catch their own fish, hunt their own meat, gather as community, teach their kids in a way that isn't just like basically a 12-year indoctrination camp, which is in my view of the current educational system.
Yep.
Right. In my view, there's never been a better time to be alive. Right. Do I want to put my kid in some public school that to have the schooling that I had? Hell no. Nothing's changed since I was in school. Right. It's probably just gotten worse. So we have this like split happening, and I think it's the best thing possible. The people that are going to lean toward tech and their big daddy Stockholm syndrome-esque experience, they want that. And that's fantastic for genuinely fantastic for them. If that's what they want, they should do that. If they want to be surveilled, if they want to have a social credit score, if they want to live in smart cities and be tracked every single place they go, they should do that because they're a human. They have free will. They can choose that. And if they want to live somewhere where they're more in connection with the land, connection with their community, connection with the ocean, connection with themselves, connection with their children, less technology, less oversight, less overreach, then they can do that. And I just think that Mexico seems to be the prime spot for that. So all of this happening, yeah, it's a total shit show. And it's the most incredible experience and opportunity that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
It really is, right? Like if you step back, because I go through the same emotions that you do. Like sometimes I'm just like, this is stupid. This is like, I mean, come on, guys. Like, you just want to grab me, like wake up. But then like, there's the other side of it to where it is. It's like, this is fascinating. This is, mm-hmm. I mean, this is probably a point in time to where hundreds of years from now, people will look back and be like, you know, like a historical turning point, I feel like. And how cool, yeah. And maybe this is sick, but like how cool in a weird way that we get to be here for it, right? Like we get to live through this experience that will be talked about for hundreds and hundreds of years.
I 100% agree. And you know what, Derek? I got two minor things to say here because I think you probably want to wrap this under an hour. Is some people, very close family members of mine included, may never wake up to this. Maybe they genuinely at some level choose the other route. And an example of that, I was listening to this interview with a gentleman who, how old would he be now? I guess he was probably 20 or 30 at the time. So he is, I think he's in his 80s or 90s. He's a Holocaust survivor. Okay. And by the way, people get very antsy when you mention the word Holocaust around what's happening nowadays. I'm not saying that the atrocities that happened at the peak of the Holocaust equate to what's happening at this present day. I'm not saying that. And I am saying at in both points, a sector of the population was being segregated and was being targeted. I'm not saying that they're equal right now, because they're absolutely not. And that being said, there are some similarities. So,
well, just real quick too, like people look at the Holocaust, that thing didn't happen overnight. You know what I mean? Like the Holocaust didn't happen overnight. There were years leading up to that. So that's why, like, sometimes when people are like, oh, it's not the, well, no, the Holocaust didn't just all of a sudden happen. There was conditioning. There was, you know, a lot of things that fell into place over the course of a few years that I would argue we're seeing right now. Whether that leads to the same thing, I hope not. But we are seeing a lot of the same tactics being used. If you just study a history book, it's not like this is controversial, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. It anytime you mention the Holocaust, it's controversial. I've just been like lit up in my Instagram DMs, being like, I can't believe you make an equation. I'm like, I'm not equating it. The peak atrocities of the Holocaust do not equate to what's happening now. And there happens to be some similarity, so let's just not be blind to that. So with that, I was listening to this interview and he's talking about how when the trains would go, trains full of Jewish people getting trained to a camp, and they could hear, there was like, they were talking about being on Sunday and being in church, and they could hear these trains going full of people going toward a camp, and they knew exactly what was going to be happening in that camp, right? The people in church. And he would talk about how they'd be singing these hymns and the whistle would go on and these trains would be going by and they could hear the screams, they could hear the shouts. And he said, and so we sang louder. And so we sang louder.
Wow.
And again, at this moment, it does not equate to what's happening in the world. But that being said, there's so many people out there that want to keep their heads so buried in the sand, because if they even open for a fucking second to what's happening in the world, it shifts their entire paradigm. It's not just someone saying, okay, yeah, you're right. I guess maybe the numbers were inflated and this thing is a lot more than what they say it is. And maybe it's ushering in a tyrannical regime. You know, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying by opening up to this stuff is everything, the way that I look at the world may be completely wrong. The way that I look at the world, everything needs to be questioned right now. And doing that for someone, I've heard people saying, I don't want to open up to it because I just don't have the time and the bandwidth to go down all of those rabbit holes. So I'm therefore, I'm just going to go revert back to what is safe for me, because we want to feel safe as human beings, right? So there's going to be a bunch of people that just fucking sing louder. That's how it is. People worry, like, when is everyone going to wake up? They're not. Yep. All that matters is you speaking your truth, doing what you can do. And I'm not saying running around and trying to be some like savior by any means. I'm saying you speak your truth day in and day out, let the truth spread like the perfume of a lovely flower, not like a bulldozer. The people that are meant to hear it will hear it and come to the place where you feel at home, where you, the microcosm of the macrocosm, can thrive in your life, because that's the best thing that we can do. If we're thriving as the microcosm and helping other people to thrive, eventually that shifts the macrocosm and helps it to thrive and pulls it out of the incredible survival fear-based state that it's in right now.
I love it. I love it. Well, we got to wrap this up. Normally I would ask you what your legacy is going to be. I like to finish with that, but here's what I'm going to do, because I want to do round two with you at one point. Is that cool? And we'll ask it on round two, because I feel like, I say it sometimes, you know, like you'll hop on the podcast and all of a sudden it's like, man, we've probably been going for 20 minutes. And it's like, holy shit, like we've been going for an hour. So I feel like we could easily do this again. So we will get to that next time. But in the meantime, I do want to make sure people that want to follow you, where's the best place? Instagram, I know. What's your Instagram handle? Where can people reach out to you?
Sure. Yeah. Instagram is the only thing that I'm active on at all. It's Taylor A. Conroy. I'm sure if you just type in Taylor Conroy, it'll show up, unless I'm getting shadow banned again. You know, when you put like some posts out that are a little bit controversial, you're like, wait a second, how did only 40 people see this? The last one got 400. That's odd.
So the other day I did a post around, it must have been something to do with COVID if I remember right. And I'd looked at the insights on it, because man, this isn't really going anywhere. It was shared like 57 times, but it had like 52 likes. And so I'm just like, so the people who did see it shared it, but obviously like no one else is seeing it. Like it just didn't make any sense to me from an insight standpoint. So the shadow ban is real, right? But hey, that's pretty dangerous stuff to reach more people. So I get it. So
And if anyone, by the way, if you guys have recommendations for me on people that I should follow and watch, I'd love them. Please send me an Instagram message on who I should follow, who I should watch to go deeper into this stuff, because let us say it's not ending tomorrow or anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I think the more people that we connect with like this, the better, and share anything that would be valid for me to look at. Appreciate that.
Awesome. Make sure you guys hit Taylor up on Instagram. Good stuff. You get to see a lot of his baby boy, cute little boy. You know, Mexico, he's always helping. He literally is like helping people flee pretty much a tyrannical government at this point. And so you guys need to follow along, check him out, go on Instagram, Taylor A. Conroy. Again, Taylor, I appreciate you coming on, man. We'll be in touch soon. All right.
Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it, man.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.